WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Yoram Kaniyuk wants to show that Arabs and Jews can transcend their seemingly irreconcilable differences. He is one of 25 Jewish and Palestinian intellectuals who signed their own peace treaty this summer. Kaniyuk is one of Israel's leading novelists. He's an Israeli-born Jew who fought in the War of Independence and was seriously wounded in 1948. Kaniyuk dramatizes the split between Arabs and Jews in his new novel, Confessions of a Good Arab. The main character is an Israeli-born man who is half-Jewish and half-Arab. His mother was a Jew who fled Nazi Germany, his father a dispossessed Arab aristocrat. This is the story of a man who is divided against himself and is virtually disowned by both Jews and Arabs. He wants to find a place in the middle where he can hate both sides with the same just hatred. I asked Kaniyuk if writing Confessions of a Good Arab was an exercise in trying to see Arabs and Jews from the perspective of one who is at once both and neither.
Well, it was not an experiment. It was writing through certain kind of pain that I had myself. Most of my character that I've written about were a little split, so I felt a need to get into that split personality or split nationality. From the force of the pain that inflict our society, the Israeli pain, the Arab pain, and so, since both sides are right and both sides are so strong about the rightness, I felt that I understand that as a person, as a human being, and so the minute I delve into that split pain, I lived there in the middle for a while and really felt it very strongly. Even though I thought maybe as a Jew I'm not allowed to have or to talk about the other pain. But then I felt, well, I come from a long line of suffering, and after all, part of the argument between Jews and Arabs in Israel is all the time who suffered more. It's just like in a Jewish family, you know, that everyone always accuses each other of not suffering enough. So I felt it very strongly. I mean, the other day I had a talk with some very important Arab writers in Israel, and the only thing we talked about is who suffered more under the Inquisition, the Jews or the Muslims.
Do you think that's a pretty fruitless way, a pointless way of looking at conflict, the who suffered more syndrome?
I think it's part of our conflict anyway, because it's a Jewish thing to be a victim, because the Jews were victims, and the Palestinian had inherited that quality or whatever, and it's very strong, because, you know, we can somehow find always a present that is workable, or I mean, there's not such hate between Palestinian and Israelis. It's the past that is in dispute. They dispute us, our past, and we dispute their past, and once we can sort of eliminate the need to misunderstand each other's past, would be much better. I mean, once Anis Mansour, is an Egyptian journalist, one wrote that if Jews were given paradise, they will hang pictures of hell on its walls. And I think it's true of both of us. I mean, both. So this book is hanging these pictures of hell, but there's no paradise, as you probably know.
The main character gets two identification cards, one Jewish and one Arab. And he says, whenever he gets eaten up with pain, he takes the Arab ID card. Do you want to explain that?
Because in Israel, the Jews are the majority. In the Middle East, the Jews are minority. So as a minority, and not a first-class citizen, his identification with his Arabness is identification with his victim. Because the Jews like to still feel victims in Israel, but they are not. They were victims until they came there. But the Palestinians are the victims of the situation. That I don't measure pain versus pain or how much the Palestinians suffer compared to the Holocaust survivors. That's not the point. The point is that right now, in the reality of Israel, the Jews are the sovereign people. I mean, Israel is the Jewish sovereignty, and the Arabs are being living under that. So, of course, when he identified with that, he identified with the victim, he identified with the underdog, he identified with the one who must be right because he suffers so much.
He sarcastically, the main character in your book, sarcastically calls himself a good Arab. What does that expression mean in Israel?
Well, there are two meanings to this expression. One, a good Arab is like a good boy. I mean, you do your job and shut up. I mean, don't make waves. And the other one comes from an old thing that they used to say about the Jews, that a good Jew is a dead Jew. And then sometimes people had used that against Arabs too. And so the sentence was, a good Arab is a dead Arab. And in the name of my book is A Good Arab, comma. In the original Hebrew, but translating it to English was impossible. So we made it a confession of a good Arab, and then the whole ironic part of the name got lost. But there's no possibility to translate the name because it doesn't mean that much outside of Israel.
Yoram Kanyuk is my guest, and his new novel is called Confessions of a Good Arab, and it tells the story of an Israeli man who's half-Jewish and half-Palestinian. The main character in your book makes a few observations about Israeli soldiers, and he describes the kind of person who's an outstanding soldier, protesting every injustice, but always doing what he was told in the end, searching his soul while he shot from the hip. Someone who defends the motherland and suffers pangs of conscience, loving his enemies, but killing them with the most sophisticated means available. Is that really an observation of yours about a certain type of person in the Israeli army?
No, it's an observation of a very large part of our, I would say, the more intelligentsia. And it includes me. I was like that when I was 18. And it's a kind of Jewish mutation. We became Hebrews. We became sort of Prussian Jews. And so many of us has strong pains. I mean, it's like trying to be Marlon Brando and John Wayne at the same time. I mean, fighting the Indians and moralize about them. but you had 300 years to have in between. We didn't. So there is some ironic things about this observation, because it's part of me that criticized the part of me that is probably the best part of me. Because we are fighting not for fun, I mean, and neither do the Palestinians. But we also, when the Israeli soldiers went into Lebanon a few years ago, and it was not a very right war, according to me, of course, and they shut their eyes when the Christians were massacring in Sabra and Shatila, the Israelis were also the ones who wrote the best and the most moving poems about it. So a Palestinian writer once accused the Palestinians and said to them, look, these Jews, I mean, first of all, they kill you, then they moralize about it, and then they write the best poems about it. In other words, why don't you at least write these poems? So I think that this is very much part of our collective psychic.
Has your new book alienated both Jewish and Palestinian friends of yours? Or has the opposite happened?
Well, it didn't. Many Jews felt a little uncomfortable with the book, and some Arabs felt uncomfortable. But on the other hand, people who were just readers were very moved. I mean, it's the professional Jews and professional Arabs that were not very happy about the book. But people on the whole were very moved and felt that it's described the pain right where it is. And also, they like the fantasies, and they like the story of the family, and because it makes sense. It's somehow very much connected to life and to myth. But there were some people who were, I don't know, disheartened because, you know, you were too pro-Jewish, or you're too pro-this, and why did you mock the Palestinians terrorists in Lebanon, and you don't know anything about it, and why you the Arabs were complaining that I made the Jewish history so strong in the book. And so it somehow, the more it's happened, the more I knew that I was right.
In your own life, you've made efforts to reconcile the Israelis and the Israeli Jews and the Palestinians. You were one of 25 artists and intellectuals who signed a Palestinian and Jewish peace accord in June of this year. And in the statement that you signed, it said that there should be an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza, and that Israel's right to exist within its borders should be recognized. How was the group that signed this this agreement formed?
Well, in a way, I'm a co-chairman of this committee.
Oh, and, I see.
And it was my idea three and a half years ago to start again talks and coexisting meetings between Israeli and Arab writers and intellectuals, which we used to have in the 60s, but then they somehow stopped. And I went to Emil Habibi, who is a very important Arab writer in Israel, probably one of the great Arab writers alive today. And we started the ball rolling by again walking together, and we were joined by Palestinians from the West Bank and Gaza. And it was the first time that a committee of Israelis, Arabs and Jews, and Palestinians were walking together. It was very difficult. We had a lot of disagreement, we had a lot of shouting, we had a lot of, as I said before, difficulties with the past, especially the history. But we slowly came to a point where we could do something that never done before, and that was to sit together and sign principles for peace, which would be agreed both by Israelis like me, who I'm a patriotic Israeli, I was fought in the war, I was wounded, I'm a part of the best tradition of Israel, yet I want to give up in order to live together, and was accepted by them. And they accepted also something that they never accepted before, recognition of Israel, and they refrain from a term that is usually called the right of the return, which means the right to return to Jaffa and Haifa and Aqua, in other words, is the liquidation of Israel. So something happened because of the Intifada that it changed some of the intellectual thinking in the West Bank and Gaza, which is now becoming more apparent also in statement made by the PLO leaders. But at the time it was the first, it was new, it was, and I think it was an historical thing, because outside of Israel maybe people didn't understand, but it was the first time that such statements were signed by so many first-class first-rate,
Do you have any hopes that this group of artisan intellectuals will help influence either the public or the government to form a similar kind of communication and finally reach an accord?
Well, we don't have that much influence. I mean, as you probably know, I mean, even though in the Jewish tradition, I mean, it was always the writers, the first Zionists were writers and then prophets. In the Bible, they have books of Jeremiah and Micha and Amos, but there are no books of Solomon. And in other words, there is this strange relation between writers, or men of spirit, as they call it in Hebrew, and authorities in our history. But today it's more a symbolic thing. So I don't think we can influence, but what we can do is that we can give the people a feeling that there is hope. And even though it's heard and people say, what is intellectuals now? It's come together with so many other things. I'm very optimistic. I think that we are coming to very soon, I don't know, a year, 2 years, half a year, I don't know, but a solution is eminent now, and I think that people are getting tired of that.
My guest is Israeli novelist Yoram Kanyuk, and his new novel is titled Confessions of a Good Arab, and it's about an Israeli man who is half Arab, half Jewish. I want to talk with you more about your own life in Israel, but first we're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest, Yoram Kanyuk, is the author of the new novel, Confessions of a Good Arab. And in Israel, he also recently organized a committee of Palestinians and Jews who co-signed a peace accord. And this was signed by 25 intellectuals and artists. I want to talk with you about your own life in Israel. Now, you've written about the split between the Israelis before World War II, the Jews who settled Israel before World War II, and their ideals, and how that was changed after the Holocaust and after many Holocaust survivors came to Israel. Now, you were born in Israel in 1930, before the war. What brought your parents to Israel?
Well, my mother was born in Russia, but she came with her parents in the beginning of the century. They called them the second wave of immigration. It was very Zionistic and very idealistic. And this is my grandfather. He died in 1917 in the First World War. But this generation was in fact the founders of modern Israel. And my father was born in Ukraine, in Galicia, but he went to Berlin and studied in Heidelberg. And I don't know, in 1926, I never understood why he decided to come to Israel. It was always mysterious. And he was a founder of the Tel Aviv Museum, and he started chamber music in Israel, which became very big. But I think that they represent, both of them in a way, the immigration we had before even Hitler came to power, which was not very much, but people who came for idealistic reasons. And very much, I mean, let's say my mother was very young, but the feeling was that something beautiful and great and fantastic is going to happen, and the Jews will all understand that condition in Europe is going to be terrible and they're going to come. I mean, when I was 7 years old in 37, we used to write letters to children in Germany saying, little Franz, I don't know, you know, you're going to die soon. Please come to Eretz Israel, sign Yoram Odani. I mean, we really believed in it. And of course, if they had listened, they would have been alive today. Yeah.
You fought in the War of Independence.
Yes, I fought in 48, and I was wounded in the Battle of the Old City. Yeah.
Did you volunteer to fight? And how did you...
No, I volunteered before. I volunteered for the... I know we were part... When I was 17, in 1947, I joined the Palmach, the underground. And,
uh-huh.
And the fighting started in around beginning of December. And from there on, I was fighting. First as partisan kind of fighting, and then more and more... in not yet army, but army-like brigade and so on.
How did having to fight in a war change your sense of idealism?
Well, this is not what changed. I mean, what war does to you, and I fought, and many Israelis are always fighting. I mean, we have to... it makes you aware, maybe, of life in a different way. I saw all my friends, not all, but many, many of my friends being killed, and I saw a lot of atrocities, and I developed even then, when I was 18 in the war, a feeling that on one hand you can be an angry man and your stomach is full of anger, but you have to use your sanity in order to find a solution. And even in 48, they were laughing at me because I was talking about working together with the Arabs and finding some solution. And it was a very hot this time, and thousands of people were being killed and tortured. But even then, I felt that the only way is to live somehow together. So I think that I'm saying that is because even then I could somehow conquer my deep Jewish anger that lingered in my stomach with the sanity that I thought needed for practical living.
In the late 40s, in 1949, you were sent by the Israeli government to Europe to try to encourage Holocaust survivors to come to Israel to settle. And I was wondering if you could explain the importance in Israel of encouraging then people from Europe to come and settle there.
No. That's a very wrong expression. No,
okay.
Because what happened in country, I mean, people, you should remember, I was not sent, I went there on, you know, as a part of, after the war, I was sent to work on a ship that there were many ships like that looked all around Europe for survivors. No one wanted these Jews. I mean, people forget that in the late 40s, even after the war, there was no country in the world that really wanted these refugees. And there were about 500,000 Jewish refugees in Europe out of the, a little bit more, or maybe 1 million, but 500 that were really refugees. I mean, no one wanted them. Not, there were pogroms in Poland when they came back to their homes. So they were looking for some way out, and America then started to take some immigrants after you didn't take Jewish immigrants during the war. And some of them managed to go to America and Australia, but most of them had to come to Palestine, to Israel. And the British, of course, didn't let them. So by the minute the state was founded, these people started to pour into Israel. Like our problem were to find them. They were hidden in camps, in places. They were moving from place to place. They were crossing borders, and we used to come on these ships and take 3,000 or 4,000 people in one boatload. I mean, they were like sardines, but not because we had to convince them. They knew that the only place in the world that will take them is Israel.
How did you find them when you were searching?
Oh, we had an all underground working there in Europe that located them and put them in camps and put them in all the... I mean, I remember coming to Yugoslavia and there was some old palace that was deserted and thousands of Jews were there, swarming there and coming from all over Europe. I mean, these people were the greatest survivors in the history and they moved from place to place, from Poland to Russia, from Russia to Hungary, from Hungary to Yugoslavia. And in most places, no one wanted them. They were unwanted even after the Holocaust, even after Auschwitz. People forget it today. So finally, 250 or 300,000 of these people came to Israel, and they changed the whole thing in Israel, because before you had an homogeneous Jewish society, Hebrew society, it was an Arab society, of course. But then came these greatest survivors of history, and they changed the whole country. They came with a different kind of pain and different kind of memory and different kind of mistrust. And our whole society was torn apart and became slowly what Israel is today. And all my books are about that split, this time when the Jew became an Israeli, the Israeli became a Jew. I mean, we didn't feel before that we were Jews. We felt that we are something else, Hebrews, or we...
What do you mean you didn't feel like you were Jews?
Because in Israel, the Zionist tradition was that we come and we didn't have any history. The 2,000 years of Jewish history in diaspora was appalled by our teachers. So we, between Bar Kokhba, which was the last revolt under the Roman, and Zionism, there was no history. I mean, there was a sentence in one of the famous Israeli novel of the time, Elik was born from the sea. We were born from the sea. We didn't have any history. We were digging archaeologicals in archaeology at the time in order to find connection to the past. And Moshe Dayan, his whole thing about archaeology was because he was somehow, when he was a young boy, he didn't want to think that his history was Jewish. But then when the pain came, and then the news of the Holocaust came, and then the people came, and they changed the whole thing, and we felt more and more a strong feeling for these people that were part of our families, because each one of us had a family that disappeared there. And so the refugees that came brought some of this memory that we didn't have, and we started to understand them, they started to understand us. It was not simple, because we were a very different breed of people. We grew up in Palestine in the heat, near the sea. We never lived in ghettos. We never had to. And we were educating ourselves to walk and to fight and to do all these kind of things that they didn't do in the diaspora in those days in Eastern Europe. So I think that this split, this idea of connecting, taking Jewish history, 2,000 Jewish history out of the window and saying it doesn't belong to me because it was too ridiculous and sad and tragic. No, it became also part of our history. We had to adapt our own history in order to become what we are.
So you were personally changed after World War II when Holocaust survivors immigrated to Israel.
I was reborn. I mean, the whole thing was for me, when I walked on this ship, this was the greatest event in my life. This is when I was shaped, because before I suffered as a person, I suffered as a human being. I fought, I was wounded, I was hurt. But all of a sudden I was with people that really went through hell, something that I never knew existed. And they kept telling me this, and their face was shown it, and you can feel it in them. And so slowly I became, I even invented the whole biography of being there, because I thought, God, if my father didn't come in 26 and I'll be born in Tarnopol, then I'll disappear like my cousins who disappeared and no one knows where they are. It's this fear of many of us Israelis that we were there by accident because our parents decided to come there, or your parents decided to, or someone else's parents decided to go to America and could. I mean, most of the Jews that wanted to go to America, of course, couldn't get in. But for me, I mean, coming back to what you said before, I won't compromise, I want that, all that. But for me, Israel's existence is, the important thing is because we need one place where Jews can always come. So it doesn't mean that it has to be big. It can be smaller, it can be compromised with Arabs and all that. But this needed, this is our life experience. We knew the time when no country in the world, no Argentina, no Brazil, no Australia, not Canada, not America, no one wanted the Jews, and 2 million Jews died in vain because they could have been saved if one of these countries wanted them. And so this is why we felt then that this tremendous thing happening in front of our eyes, I mean, from 1947 until 1949 or 50.
Getting back to something we were talking about earlier, you had formed a committee of of Jews and Palestinians who signed their own peace accord, this group of intellectuals and artists. You obviously feel that it's important that you understand and describe to others the pain and suffering of the Jewish people, but you also think it's important that the Jewish people understand what the Palestinians have been through, and that the Palestinians understand what the Jews have been through, so that you can reach some kind of understanding.
I think so. I think that we have to take to dismantle the kind of fears of each other, of myth that we build about each other, of and look at the reality and says, look, we've been fighting each other, we've been hurting each other. You Arabs don't think that we should have come to the Middle East to save our soul. We think that we had to come here because it's the only place we could. Let's share this country together and build something beautiful together. There can be two states, Palestinian and Jewish state. There will be a majority of Palestinians on the Palestinian side, majority of Jews on the Israeli side. Eventually it will become probably a confederation. I think that the Middle East is waiting, is going to be wonderful, because we have a lot of talent that wants to develop and a lot of industry that want to develop. So it can be a wonderful place instead of fighting all the time about something that sound always like 18th century. I mean, you fly a flag and you take the flag down. I mean, we acting so stupidly. I mean, we shouldn't. I mean, we should be a little bit more wise. And I think that part of it is not understanding that the Palestinians have a case. They became a nation only lately. We became a nation only lately. Zionism and the Palestinian movements are both new to their histories. There never been a national movement among the Jews, and there never been a Palestinian movement among the Palestinians. But there is today, and so we have to recognize one, recognize the other, and understand the other. And it's two rights which create a tragedy, and it's two rights that maybe create something beautiful. It's only a way of giving up some of the kind of bitterness and
Well, I thank you very much for talking with us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My guest has been Yoram Kanyuk, who is an Israeli novelist, the author of the new book Confessions of a Good Arab, which is about an Israeli man who is half Arab and half Jewish. It's published by George Braziller. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.